Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're gonna get Amin in those, so you gotta listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP. That's 1-800-639-8783. Or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the latest edition of the Woke Bros. Of course, I'm your co-host, Big Waz, a.k.a. Wazzy Lambray, and I'm joined by my brother, my partner, no longer in L.A. He's back working for the man at UW. Danny Bessner, what's going on, brother?
Hey, Waz, thanks so much for having me. Glad to be back. Hey, I was noticing something today. I was thinking about it. I think I've been on Woke Bros. 9 or 10 times. I haven't yet been on the NBA pod. Well, why not?
Well, I'm not the guest booker on group chat and Weekends with Waz.
Booking, okay.
Yeah. Weekends with Waz is no more. But you know what? Next time I have guest booking authority, I will come get you for your Charles Oakley takes.
We can talk about the 94 Knicks. I could talk about them for at least 5 or 6 minutes.
I love it. Hey, listen, man, I wish that, you know, I had you on under better circumstances, but obviously this past weekend, the freaking violence erupted in Palestine and Israel. Of course, as we speak, the Israeli army is bombing the living daylights out of Gaza. Of course, on Saturday, Hamas, whatever y'all want to call them, terrorists, resistance, liberation front, whatever. I mean, like, the distinction sort of doesn't matter for the purposes of what this conflict is about. They swarmed into Israel by land, by sea, by air, on hand glides.
Yeah,
that which was is the craziest. The craziest part to me.
They killed
hundreds of people. They took a bunch of hostages. Obviously, this elicited a very strong response from an Israeli regime that's used to sort of fucking these people up anyway.
Can talk about specifically like the sort of situation.
We'll get into that, because I wanted today to act as sort of a primer, right? On Israel and Palestine, because I watch a lot of news events. I read a lot of the accounts coming out of the mainstream media. Of course, there's people on Twitter fighting back and forth, but I feel like they just throw around these terms and talk about the conditions on the ground as if everybody who is consuming the news knows exactly what they mean, exactly what those conditions mean. And so obviously Danny, being the PhD scholar that he is on history, specifically with this conflict, Danny being somebody who obviously is Jewish American himself, but also
what gave it away.
We're not getting canceled this episode, Danny. But also, like, you're somebody who went to Jewish primary school, right? Yeah. You're somebody who did. Have you done the Birthright trip?
I didn't do Birthright, but I went on a different type of
trip to Israel.
I haven't been in 20 years, over 20 years, but I have.
So you're very familiar with the orthodoxy, the sort of Zionism doctrine, if you will, if there were such a thing. Like, you're
it's a nationalist ideology. There are different strands of it, it's certainly a nationalist ideology. There's a labor Zionist strand, which isn't very powerful. There's a religious Zionist strand. There's a more ethno-national Zionist strand. So just like there are different versions of Americanism, the American ideology, there are different versions of Zionism. And just from a technical stance, it's absolutely true. And it's an ideology.
So as it stands right now, what's your understanding of what's happening on the ground?
So should I give like a little bit of a larger context?
Yeah, go ahead. Do you?
Yes. Yeah, so basically, Israel has occupied this place on its west, basically in its west half. Like if you look at Israel on a map, there's a small part in its western border, really southwestern border slightly, called the Gaza Strip. And Israel has been basically in control of the Gaza Strip since the 1967 Arab-Israeli War. And over the decades, the situation in Gaza, for a variety of reasons, has gotten worse and worse and worse. It's oftentimes referred to as the world's largest open-air prison. So that might give a sense of the conditions. Just basically the most important sort of political faction or group is Hamas. And as Waz said, Hamas recently, last week, broke out of Gaza and did exactly what Waz said. This is a big deal in Israel, just to give some very specific political context. One of the Netanyahu's government, and Bibi Netanyahu is, of course, the prime minister of Israel, and he's ruling the government. One of his main things was to actually de-emphasize the importance of Gaza and emphasize instead the importance of the West Bank, which is on Israel's east side, east border, and which is a larger, much more developed, more stable territory than Gaza. So Netanyahu focused more on settlements in Gaza, settlements in the West Bank, annexations in the West Bank, to the detriment of Gaza. So one of the things that seems to have happened is that the Netanyahu administration's focus on the West Bank created an opportunity for Hamas to break out of Gaza and do what the group did, you know, murder civilians and take military targets as well last Saturday, like Waz said. So just one more quick thing. After the attacks, the question was how Israel would respond. So domestically, if you can imagine, Netanyahu is quite weak. For people who might not know, there has been a lot of opposition against him in recent months from the more liberal part of the Israeli populace, because his administration was facilitating or allowing what some have referred to as a judicial coup. So there were a lot of protests against Netanyahu, and this further breakout of Gaza really weakens him. So domestically, Netanyahu is feeling weak. There's a rally around the flag phenomenon that is just like in the U.S. after 9/11. Israelis are, you know, feeling securitized and afraid for understandable reasons. And so you have a weak domestic government or a worried domestic government. Netanyahu is also facing corruption charges and all these other things. Meanwhile, internationally, after the attack, basically every major country in the world, or certainly every major country that matters in this context, made clear that Israel could kind of do what it wants. So you have a international environment that's permissive to what Israel might want to do, which is probably not going to last forever. It's a short moment. And then you have a domestically weak Benjamin Netanyahu, someone who's afraid, who really is strategy.
So he has to project some level of strength by killing as many Palestinians as possible.
This is the worry, right? That international permissiveness plus domestic weakness would engender a particularly strong response, which it seems like it might happen. There have been airstrikes now for days, and you can see images of those online. And it also appears like there might be a ground invasion and boots on the ground occupation, which could be a very serious escalation.
Okay, so I'm gonna ask you. I'm gonna be annoying this episode, Danny. I'm gonna be that person at the party who finds out what it is that you do for a living and start peppering you with these these sort of simplistic questions. So as best as you can say, what's the fight about?
Well, the fight is about access. You know, we're Marxists here. It's about access to land and material resources. And not to go into the whole history, but groups that were at one point maybe not totally, but like maybe more equally situated in the 1930s and 1940s in an ethno-national conflict over land, one side, the Israelis, has decidedly won. And the other side, the Palestinians, I would say, has really lost, at least until this point, and have suffered under decades of occupation. So it's really about the character of a nation state, fundamentally. What type of state will Israel be? And Israel is a state organized around ethno-nationalist ideas. They have laws that are explicitly linked to, the only way to really put it is, race/religion/ethnicity, in that there's something called the right of return. And if you meet certain rubrics of descent, you could return to Israel and become a full citizen.
You could go to Israel if you wanted to, Danny.
I could go to Israel and become a citizen, even though my understanding is that Israel has prevented some Jews in the past from becoming citizens. Famously, Meyer Lansky, I believe.
Wow.
He was
seeking asylum in Israel, yeah, and they told him to kick rocks.
Yeah, I think he was one of the only people denied citizenship in Israel. And I also believe more recently there have been critics that have been denied. But anyway, whatever. There are rules organized around that. Whereas if you were a Palestinian and kicked out in 1948 or who fled in 1948, you would not have access to, you know, your family's land. Now, Jews would sometimes reply, well, I don't have access to my family's land in Germany, and that's the edge of history, you know, but these are the what the fight's ultimately about, you know, and a formation of a nation state and what that nation state means.
So, and because I think that point about this like ethno nation state based on religion, ethnicity, race, whatever you want to call it, is important, because some people might say, and again, these are things that you might hear at a party. They might be like, look, the U.S. did the same shit to the fucking Native Americans. We pummeled them, but we didn't pulverize them into the U.S. equivalent of the Gaza Strip. We just, you know, we've completely cooked them, and we just let them be U.S. citizens. They we gave them some casinos, you know.
We really did eradicate. I mean, in a real way, like,
yes,
there were
that, which is the difference, right?
Right. And so I think what you'll often hear is like, well, every country does this, right? Mm-hmm. Every country that's based on settlement and colonization, like the United States was, like Brazil was,
like Australia was,
Mexico. I mean, like, actually there's a unique history, but there are settlement colonies that do participate in indigenous genocide and eradication. And people will say, why are people criticizing Israel when these other countries have, you know, they would say even worse pests. And the question, what I would give to that is that, you know, you shouldn't let the problems and crimes of the past, you know, prevent from those that are undergoing that are happening in your own time, that moral norms have changed, and that I'm an American, the United States implicitly supports the policy by really providing Israel with a lot of,
well, no, but what I'm trying to say, Danny, is why can't, you know, in some sort of peace accord, right, just imaginary, just humor me here, why can't we just sort of bring the Palestinians into the Jewish state?
It might have been possible, two reasons. It might have been possible 30 years ago, but I think conditions have changed and Israel has become so much more powerful, relatively speaking, that they don't need to make those sorts of agreements. Two, there's a fear that Israel's character as a Jewish state won't be preserved if there's
And that's what I was kind of getting at. It's like, idea, if we do form a nationhood in this place,
it is a Jewish state, you know, that is,
and,
that
exactly, and we bring all these Arabs into the nation, then the entire point of Zionism, which is a state that is Jewish, is that becomes moot. Like, what's right. the point
which emerges that? And I think this is really crucial in order to understand the Israeli perspective, which emerges from the traumas of European anti-Semitism that culminated in the Holocaust. I mean the Holocaust is still in living memory, so there are a lot of people who believe that, and one hears this growing up as a Jew, that there's a safe haven, that you can't know that there won't be another Holocaust. And I think it's important to understand, like, the sheer trauma of the Holocaust to the last three or so generations of Jews. I think the number is 1 in 3 Jews were killed, you know, like, on the world stage. I hope I get these numbers right. I used to know exact 2/3 of European Jewry, you know, like, the European Jewish population was eradicated. And Israel's response, and Israelis, many would admit this, to that sort of genocide, right? So this is sort of the mindset, this post-traumatic mindset of a state formed within living memory of a genuinely eradicationist project, you know, with many people have direct family connections to people murdered in that. Even I do, you know? And so it's just like a very common thing. And so I think this is what's undergirding a lot of the Israeli policy and American support for it in particular. Now, to me, I would say that, you know, we have to that sort of emotional reaction to a genuine trauma shouldn't necessarily guide policy now and forever, and that there are other considerations to be had when discussing this.
So, because I listen to your show a lot, Danny, shouts to the fellow prestige heads, go make sure you subscribe and become a Patreon of American Prestige.
Substack.
Oh, excuse me, Substack. Sorry, Substack. I get my subscription service. Yeah,
you get your independent. Now that you're big time, you don't care anymore.
Well, I mean, you know,
regulars have to worry about that.
we'll see. I feel like that's a animating part of the sort of posture that Israel's state takes, right? It's like, no, we can't have some half Arab state. when, you know, in the past, it's been state policies in places like Germany to eradicate us, in places like Russia to completely subjugate and fucking oppress us, in places like the United States to not accept people trying to flee the fucking Holocaust. That's part of this story.
And it's like close enough that it still has emotional resonance. In 100 years, it probably won't be, you know, but like people my grandparents' age were in Auschwitz. Still generationally kind of close. Like my child, like he will feel less close, and it, his my grandchildren, it'll be more like in memory. So to some degree, this is fading as time goes on, but it's still something like Netanyahu, who's what, 70? I mean, it's a living memory, you know?
Yep.
I think that undergirds a lot of, not to excuse by any stretch, but I just trying to explain the sort of mindset.
Sure. So I want to get to the sort of Palestinian mindset in all of this. Can you explain to people what it means for Israel to be annexing and settling, quote unquote? I feel like that word is so like...
It's literally what it sounds like. It's you go in and you take land and you live on land, and that over time, that land becomes part of the larger state. Like, again, has occurred throughout settler colonial history from the United States to Australia to, again, Brazil, is that it's a policy of colonization. What's strange, or what appears strange about it, and that makes it difficult to understand, is that this is really hundreds of years after the moment when colonization happened, and it's after... sort of the decolonizing revolutions of the 1950s and 60s and 70s that occurred in the Middle East and Africa in particular, and East Asia and Asia. So it's an atavism, you know, in a sense that there's still this like in progress colonial project. It's
project just happening.
Yeah. And it's exactly what it sounds like. I mean, Gaza was really shut off. You know, Israel was in total control.
But no, because again, like, I feel like people don't, they hear like, oh, there are these settlers, right? You got to understand, especially like, because, you know, Danny, you're so far removed from whatever history you got in high school and elementary school. But the term settler is not a pejorative in our teaching of it to Americans.
Right.
It's completely not. It's like this innocuous, like, no, these people, they came and grew like grapes and shit. And just, you know, they were herding cattle and they, you know, they made these little straw cribs and it was just great. But like, can you, like, who is a modal Israeli settler in the West Bank? What does it look like when you come and you take something? Who are you taking it from, if anybody? How do you keep your shit after doing that? What does that look like?
Right. I mean, it comes in and oftentimes involves displacing populations that were already there. And that could come through intimidation. It could come through the use of the official state. It could just be land that hasn't been exploited to a particular degree. And then you go in and, you know, you have military support oftentimes, and you literally start economically developing the land. And over time, there's more and there's more and there's more. And the idea I think in Israel, you know, from like a far right government like Netanyahu's, was that Israel would annex much of the territory that it was able to, maybe not all of it, but a significant degree. They would be in relative control of the West Bank. Gaza would be an afterthought. And that would be it.
You hear this a lot in the news. There's this idea that a lot of the military might was deployed to the West Bank in order to secure these settlements, these new developments, in order to make it like to add to the area that is
to add its territory. And I think it's important. I mean, it's hard to get into, but this has to do with like the particular domestic political coalition that supports Netanyahu, which has become more and more right wing and more in hock to the settlement movement, which wasn't always in the history of Israel supported like it has. So again, this
What is the justification for? Why is it important that they settle more of the West Bank?
Hello, listener. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, little, hey, boy, how you doing? And Noodle's just like,
Which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with the plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance. Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher-turned-podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep. Free shipping, vacuum sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise, but maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
There's religious justification. Gotcha. There's that, you know, this is the land of the Jews and they should take it back. There's always security justification. You know, the stronger your border is. There's trauma from war, and there's developmental, the typical justifications for colonization. It's just strange because, again, this happened so much longer ago here. You know, I'm in Seattle right now. That settlement ended
about 500 years ago.
Yeah, it's like a really long time. So
if you're a Palestinian person living in the West Bank, you just constantly see this happening. Essentially, they're coming in, they're bullying the fuck out of people who have lived there for actual literally centuries. Like, this is not like, it's not like me and my Haitian immigrant parents just pulled up to Brooklyn and, you know, might have bought a crib or whatever. Like, no, these families have lived there for actual literally centuries. And it's backed by the Israeli regime, and they just kick these people off. With the and it doesn't take a genius or a scientist to understand what's happening. It's like, no, we're slowly but surely pushing you the fuck out of here.
And
so you're all gone.
It's been a real problem for international politics because a lot of the surrounding governments don't want to get involved because Israel has just become so allied with the United States and has become such a de facto part of the, you know, larger American imperium that it's very difficult to challenge them, you know, in the way like happened in the 67 and 73. And frankly, the Arab governments don't want to challenge them. From my understanding, there's no real like outreach to the Palestinian people in a real way. There's domestic issues related to Palestinian refugees in places like Egypt and Jordan. So it's a population that has to a large degree been abandoned by the world. It's really a terrible tragedy to witness. There's just nothing to say to give a real sense of sort of the traumas and the degradations experienced by colonized peoples.
Okay, so another thing I wanted to get into, as best as you can describe to folks, what are the facts on the ground in Gaza today? Like, what is the life of a Palestinian person living? What's their daily life like? You hear this stuff about 4 hours of electricity, raids and blah, blah, blah. Like, what does that look like for the average Gazan?
Yeah, I think it's similar to a displaced person's camp. And it's similar to kind of like a prison camp where there's ebbs and flows of violence and fear. The issue I think is that something could happen at every time, at any time. Gotcha. Like you hear about people in Waziristan where the United States did all of its drone strikes. Like they don't like open skies, right? There's a notion that there's not in control and you don't understand the logic for things. And it's just people could go to, you know, look at Human Rights Watch to get a exact, you know, breakdown of how it is, but it's a terrible living conditions, and it's really tragic and sad.
And it's every single day, right? And so
it's every single day. It's like being in a displaced persons camp, you know,
with no hope of anything ever getting better, and you're
understanding very young population, very little hope. Because I think it's difficult to say that the movement didn't lose. You know, maybe there's something that could happen. You could get something like a Good Friday Agreement, but it doesn't look good. So there's lack of a hope in the future. There's a hopelessness. There's bad living conditions. It's just very tragic and sad.
And who are Hamas? Because I've seen this freaking... These guys have been in the news more than anything that I've ever seen in my life, right? And
it's one of they're the armed / political grouping of a particular faction of.
Do they have a political constituency, Danny? Are they sort of doing their own thing? Are they supported by the people? Like, I think folks need to understand this.
It's difficult it's difficult. I am not enough of an expert to say to what degree, but
what do they purport themselves to be then?
I mean, it's representatives of the Palestinian nationalist movement. And I'm certain that there are elements of the Palestinian population that support them, just like
anything else.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. You would have to get details on the ground about how people, which I don't have access to or know, how people, like, does Hamas participate in, like, local health organizations, you know? Mm-hmm. You look at, like, the traditional Muslim Brotherhood, one of the reasons that they were able to succeed throughout the Arab world was because they basically functioned as a social service organization. Exactly. So I don't know enough about, like, I would venture to say that there's not... a lot of support for actions that might be viewed as effectively suicidal, but I don't know.
Because the sort of way this gets framed from, you know, like, it's so funny. And this is a silly example, but like, I remember when Biden got elected and like, because there's a lot of, Black professional women within my social orbit, like the amount of Yas Queens I saw on social, I was just like, man, like I really do know like a lot of black yuppies who are like really excited about this Kamala Harris thing. Like, it's one of those things, like, you spend no time ever thinking about Kamala Harris or people who would ever give a fuck about her, and then all of a sudden the election happens and it's like, oh shit, like, she does have somewhat of a constituency amongst, you know, a sort of quasi elite group of black people.
Everyone has. Yeah, I mean, everyone, groups oftentimes have some sort of constituency. I mean, I doubt Hamas would have been able to pull off something like this without a real
constituency. Without much of a constituency.
Yeah. It's an incredible humiliation to the military. Something I should have said also earlier is that it really is a humiliation, because Israel prides itself on its security structures and its powerful military. And it's had that reputation. You know, it's been attacked so many times and it was able to succeed. And there were true, like, brilliant strategic military victories. Like, there was a tank battle in the Golan Heights. It's like very famous. And so there's like this pride in militarization, particularly again after the Holocaust, you know, where there's all this like masculine ideals being set out that Jews aren't always going to be slow, blah, blah, blah. So it's a humiliation on a number of levels. So I think that also is going to engender an even harsher response that might have otherwise occurred in a different nation.
So again, I just want to pivot to people so that people can get a better understanding. It's just like the shit that you see, like, don't even bother turning on CNN or MSNBC
yeah,
or any of that shit, like, much less the New York Times, right? What I would say is that there's this framing of this being Israel's 9/11, right? And all my Jewish people that I follow on Instagram and stuff like that, they're like, man, like, we don't decapitate babies and blah, 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 blah. And this being in 9/11 and all of that stuff, which, you know, I wouldn't even dispute, right? As somebody who, like, I don't have any skin in the game. Like, it's not really something that I wake up every single day thinking about.
This is what I would say, is that, like, this... you know, like, as a Jew, it's like images of Jews being slaughtered in living memory of the Holocaust is going to engender a particular emotional response in the population. That's how I read it. You know, it's like this, it's not epigenetic in the sense that it's in the genes, but it's like the Holocaust is very much tied to modern Jewish identity. You know, like, when I went on a trip, I went to Auschwitz, then Israel. You know, that's a particular...
That's the message, like, that, yeah, you're not, it's not... You know, right.
Yeah, that, right. That's what I think explains comments like that. That's what I think it explains, like, the emotional horror, which is, I mean, obviously the death of civilians is horrible in any instance. You know, we would say that about the death of Palestinian civilians is absolutely terrible. The death of Israeli civilians is absolutely terrible. I mean, I think I told you, one of my former students was killed, this guy Chaim Katzman.
Wow.
And he was a great guy. He was doing peace work on the Gaza border, and he was murdered in the first stage of the Gaza attack. And that's a terrible tragedy, you know, as a progressive leftist humanist. And that's what I think engenders this sort of anger. And
so I think about it, 9/11 parallels in a sort of different way. Spencer Ackerman, who you guys have had on your show, I'm a subscriber to his newsletter, Forever Wars, which, by the way, I'll tell anybody, if you want to be kept abreast on foreign affairs, all you need is Spencer and American Prestige. I swear to fucking God.
He's a Brooklyn guy, too.
Wow. Yeah, I know he lived in Brooklyn. I thought he was a Brooklyn hipster, though.
No. I think he like grew up in Flatbush. I think he might have.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. No, he's like real. He's like really from Brooklyn.
So he wrote a piece in The Nation about 20 years since 9/11, essentially. He went and visited the 9/11 Museum, and he was like, this shit is such a waste of time and, like, such a tragedy in the way that we tell this story, because it's such hogwash. Right. You know, this idea that these crazy Muslim extremists just dropped from the moon, Danny. They just dropped from the moon, hating America, right? And this idea of an unprovoked attack on the U.S. land, and this death of innocence, and none of these people deserve this, and blah, 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 blah. And the point that Spencer was ultimately trying to make, he's like, of course the people in the buildings in the Twin Towers did not provoke an attack. Of course all of those people who died senselessly. Of course they were innocent. But to characterize it, that attack, as an attack that was quote unquote unprovoked, that doesn't address the actions of U.S. empire abroad, quote unquote, in our name is crazy.
Yeah. Like this is why I think this is what sort of Marx brings, is that you look at the structures. You don't look at like the moral play of the individual actors. Like for 9/11, you could see how empire and colonization and capitalism led to a particular concatenation of factors that led the child of a Saudi dynasty to become one of the largest, funders of Islamic Jihad throughout the world, right? There's a context that engenders these things. Just like in the Palestine-Israel conflict, the context of settler colonialism, the context of being part of the American empire shapes everything that happens. It's just that's not the way it's almost not the way like liberalism functions, not to get too abstract. Like,
no, but please do.
Like liberals and liberalism focuses on like individual acts, right? It centers the individual. If you're more of a left winger, you really center the structure that it creates a series of incentives.
Danny, just think about it. Just think about the crazy shit these guys did, these Hamas homies did, knowing full well what was going to come behind
it. That's what's so strange about it. That's what I asked Rashid Khalidi. I don't see the strategic goal, but maybe they're just so desperate that it was like a fuck you, you know? That
amen.
Even if they knew that it was going to get – it's basically a suicidal act, and that's why I imagine they're – I don't know how like Hamas is going to fare after this, because it's like such a provocation that the outcome is so predictable.
Yeah, and so again, like people are going to be like, "Oh, you're blaming Israel for what happened?" I'm like, "Bro, like good. Look, no sane person can say that the people who died this past weekend and the days after are people who provoked Hamas. That's absurd. Of course, they themselves did not provoke this attack. That's everybody knows that.
But right. Again, collective punishment is against international law as well, right? Collective punishment is something that all people should respect for anyone, that you're punishing a population for the actions of a group or a series of individuals. It is against international law, and it's terrible morally. You shouldn't do that ever. You know, you could be against that in any population in the world. You should be against collective punishment, which is, you know, one of
what
the
Israel is doing right now.
Yeah. And about firebombing and airstrikes in general. I mean, it makes you think of the atomic bomb. It makes you think of, you know, the burning of Tokyo and the destruction of Germany. Like this gets into the problem of air war itself, which is by definition a form of collective warfare, a collective punishment. And I wish we could even talk about whether anything like that should ever be
any used. Airstrike should any ever airstrike be used.
Is collective punishment. And just one thing I want to make sure, if you ever hear that it's like really targeted and really well, that's just not true. Nothing
of
is
course. Come on, man. Like that. Yeah. And that's what I would say, because a lot of this stuff is about, you know, decapitation of babies. Of course, this is heinous. If this actually happened,
that's absolutely inhuman.
This isn't even nobody would argue that that shit was okay. But what I would posit to those people, I'm like, would you have rather that Hamas had U.S. airplanes to bomb Israeli babies with? Well, is that somehow a more honorable death for those babies? Is it more just when it's done that way?
I think it gets into, you could just see that we talk about this conflict like it's two equal states. And it's just basically one extremely powerful state and a society of people that are incredibly disorganized. And you could see it with the destruction of Gaza going out right now with very sophisticated, if not, you know, accurate weaponry. The issue, I think, is even if Israel followed every international law and every guideline to a T, this type of warfare is going to kill innocents. And we should just be against that in principle.
100%. And I want to get to you about some, you know, talking points that people might encounter while they're trying to follow this news story, right? I think obviously there's just going to be a much you know, bigger fervor to try to understand what's happening over there. Just now, I'm sitting next to my lady and she's watching a video on social and some fucking British guy is like, essentially, there's no such thing as a Palestinian people. Like they were never the sovereign of this land. They never had control of this land. There's no such thing. There never was a Palestine. What would you say to something like that, Danny?
All nationalisms are constructed. I mean, I would really point people. We made this long series on the history of Palestine with Rashid Khalidi.
Please go listen to this.
Go listen to it, because I mean, all nationalisms and identities are constructed. So it's such a silly thing to even say. There's no like real Americanness. There's no real anything. These are all constructed over time in historical context. And the Palestinian national identity is as legitimate as any other form of national identity, is what I would say. And to claim otherwise is very strange, ahistorical and atheoretical. I mean, you know, for us, the goal should be to get by all nationalisms, but you know, we could still recognize, if we're still living in the world,
man, it's tough, Danny. I think about that all the time.
Yeah, that's the goal though, right? Like, and we shouldn't forget that, like,
it should be, but yo, nationalism is such an animating force in the sense that like it gets people to row in the same direction. It's yeah. So fucking powerful.
Destroy the left, dude. Like, the fucking nationalism is why the countries fought each other in World War I, why the working classes fought each other and didn't unite. Nationalism is the most powerful ideology of the last 500 years. It's not even close.
It's not even close.
Not even close.
And so I want to get you out of here. I don't want to take too much of your time, Danny. There's no way to solve this. The Palestinians are pretty dumb. They're not going to leave. They're not going to move.
Yeah.
The only way to end this literally would be to kill them, would be to holocaust
them citizens of Israel, right? Right? That's
it seems like the only two options.
Right. Because I think what the Israeli government had hoped was that they could kind of just not address it. That there would be a rump Palestinian group in Gaza and an increasingly rump one in the West Bank, and they would kind of just always be there, you know, kind of like how racism always kind of exists in the United States. Right. They would kind of just always be there. And the shock of one of the reasons that this was just such a big shock is that it showed that you can't demonstrate, that you can't just ignore it. So it's going to force a reckoning for Israel. For the United States that supports Israel, is that what are you going to do in this situation? And I would urge people in the United States listening to this, they have any interest to tell their political representatives that one shouldn't support collective punishment of a people ever.
Man, there's really nothing much else to say. Danny, thank you so much for your time today, man. This brother is a scholar. This is like literally a historian.
A doctor.
I've never called you Dr. Danny Bessner before. Calling you Doc.
Yeah, when I reply to like wedding invites, I always write doctor. And when I book planes, that's the only time I ever use it.
I love it, man. American Prestige, obviously, easily one of my favorite podcasts. Again, I cannot implore you guys enough. Go listen to Danny's discussion, or it's a discussion series on the history of Palestine. It is excellent. It's essential to understanding the conflict. It's essential to understanding that ultimately, again, it's just another capitalistic, colonialistic project on these people.
Nationalism. I think this one really underlines nationalism.
Nationalism.
It's. I feel like in. You know, there was a lot of it after 9/11, but America, it goes in and out, right? We're in a moment where it's not in.
We don't really give a fuck about American nationalism right now.
Right
we
now, just don't. Dude, remember fucking Freedom Prize?
Oh my God, it was nuts.
9/11, it was crazy. People would get, like, I remember I was reading, people would get attacked for not wearing the American flag. You know, so like, sure. It's not like that. But I think this highlights, you know, the many problems of nationalism in the world.
All right, we will see you guys next week. Peace out.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.